Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Hello and welcome to Millions of Screens. I'm creative producer Leo Garcia, joined as always via Zoom by TV Awards editor Libby Hill and TV deputy editor Ben Travers. Today, we're going to be talking about Ted Lasso's coming back. We knew it was coming back, but now we have a teaser trailer and a date. Some Falcon and Winter Soldier news, Ben, that you broke. You broke that news, right?
Broke it right over your head, just for you. I wanted you to have it. I was like christening a ship, and the news was in a bottle, and you were the ship, and I broke it, and somehow that metaphor works. Just go with me. It's all for Leo.
And then finally, we'll talk Mayor of Easttown, Ben's new obsession, something that I think Ben and Libby have seen all of,
no.
And I've seen one of.
We've still got 2 hours left, like two full hours that we haven't seen.
They will not give us. They will not give us hints. They have that lockdown.
So no matter how many times I ask who did it, you guys don't know.
We don't.
No.
Do you have a guess?
I've asked Casey Boyce directly for access to these episodes, and he said he would give them to me, and they have not shown up, so I'm calling him out on this podcast. Where are these episodes?
This is millions and millions of little screens.
Can't you shut up? I'm busy. Boy, what a great show.
Keeping ahead of the clicker, our recap of the biggest news items from this past week. We mentioned up top, but today, earlier today, the teaser trailer for Ted Lasso Season 2, Apple TV Plus dropped it. This also goes along with the announcement of the premiere date, which is, looking it up.
July 23rd.
July 23rd. Libby on it. I didn't do any research. But are you excited, Ben? I'm excited. I watched the trailer and I was like, I don't know about this song choice for Queen, but I am excited about the second season.
It's a little obvious, but
it took everything I had not to immediately start rewatching Ted Lasso, like as soon as the trailer ended. Mainly because I got this happens every once in a while when a show, you know, it takes its hiatus and comes back for a new season, and the characters look just a little bit different. But they felt so markedly like upgraded. Like every one of them got a 20% bonus for their personal upkeep, you know, wardrobe, you know, hygiene, tanning, vacations, whatever it was. Like everybody looks just a bit better compared to what they did in season one. And it had been a while since I'd felt that way. And I think it stems mainly from the fact that I watched season one so many times. But
I mean, I think what really grasped me from that teaser, and I'm not the biggest Ted Lasso fan just because that's such a high bar to like pass. I really enjoy the show. I'm a fan. But one thing I liked is like there was a lot of non-Lasso footage in there. And while, yeah, Ted's my favorite dude, like this really looks like it's turning into sort of a traditional Bill Lawrence ensemble show, which I'm not mad about because that's where you're getting the different stories, the different experiences, the different POVs outside of, you know, Midwestern white guy. And that's what I'm really excited to see them explore. That was very promising for me.
Also, it looks like there's gonna be way more action on the pitch, and their new away kits look stellar. They look stellar.
Kits?
So this is soccer. I also know soccer terms.
That's how they refer to uniforms in the UK.
It's not sweaters?
Footy. No, it's a kit. It's your kit.
But yeah, Leo, I think we all thought immediately of you at that one during that one moment during the teaser.
It's it's the button to the trailer, I thought. It's the last joke.
Had to just slip that in there before the draft.
Just gotta get a New York Jets. I like that all the things I enjoy in the comedy world, however sparse they are, all slam on the Jets constantly. Seth Meyers does it weekly. Jets and Mets.
I mean, it's evergreen comedy. What else can you go for?
Ben, the news you broke just yesterday after talking to Nate Moore of Falcon, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, is that it will not be running in the limited series category at this year's Emmys alongside WandaVision, but instead in the drama race. Obviously, the first question we all asked was season two, right? Isn't that a requirement for an entry into the drama race as opposed to limited series? What answer did you get? How can you explain that?
Well, the answer I got was a non-committal promise of intent, I think is how I would best describe it. They definitely weren't ready to, you know, say that season two has been greenlit or in production, the term they've used before in general when talking about making second seasons of Marvel Disney Plus shows, that they're kicking around ideas. They've kicked around ideas. They always hope to be able to make more seasons with specific shows. They use that, you know, now directly about Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Definitely from the way that Mr. Moore discussed it, it seemed like there was much more than ideas being kicked around, and there was at least, you know, upward trajectory in terms of the possibilities. But yeah, like this whole thing sent me spiraling in the sense that I had to go back and look at the rule book for the Emmys and be like, how do they actually define a drama series? And there's nothing about season twos or threes or anything like that. It's just, I don't even think they use the word ongoing when they're talking about what a drama series is supposed to be.
There is language in the limited series, right? In limited series, so, there's that the yes. language that no ongoing storyline and or main characters in subsequent seasons.
So I just checked my notes, and yes, it says there drama series are supposed to be series in which the ongoing theme, storyline, and main characters are presented under the same title and have continuity of production supervision. That is the drama series definition. Limited series is a program with two or more episodes with a total running time of at least 150 program minutes that tells a complete non-recurring story and does not have any ongoing storyline and or main characters in subsequent seasons. So that one seems a little more nailed down considering they've had to over recent years make those specific adjustments in lieu of Big Little Lies. But I turn it over to Libby, who knows much more about this part of the conversation than I do. I am just so thrilled for Leo that there's at least a possibility of getting more of his Bucky and the Falcon buddy bro down.
My beloved Bucky and Sam. Now that they're fully formed, it feels like the series is really ready to take off finally and give me the buddy cop action drama I want. It just took five episodes.
When are you starting your story, Leo?
When are you starting your story? Episode five.
Yeah, apparently that's kind of the MO here. Not to start my part in this by raining on anyone's parade, but when Ben was talking about intent and, you know, discussions happening about theoretical season twos of Falcon and Winter Soldier, I'm reminded of my favorite Simpsons quote, which is actually from season 11. It's shockingly late, theoretically, in the run. And it's at a newspaper, I believe, and someone tells Lisa, oh, well, a portion of every newspaper is made from recycled material. And she's like, oh, what percent? And the woman says, zero. And then there's a beat, and she says, zero's a percent. That's how I feel when I hear about Disney talking about season two of Falcon and Winter Soldier, in that, you know, someone said the words, what if we made a season two of Falcon and Winter Soldier? And then they popped it in drama series. But that's the thing about the Emmys. If you'll remember, and maybe you don't because people have lives, but there was a lot of controversy back in the day over Orange is the New Black. It was getting shunted from comedy series to drama series. It was back when the Academy was really struggling with what to do with a comedy that was an hour long, like obviously pre-Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's Reign of Terror. But, you know, it would get shunted back between because it's very difficult, especially in these days of dramedy, to kind of explain that, to put hard and fast rules as to what is a comedy, what is a drama, especially if you aren't letting shows determine their own fate, or if you were reserving the right to overrule those decisions. So in that way, it made sense that they were trying to adhere to sort of time, half-hour shows go here, hour-long shows go here. But obviously, those lines got muddy. That's where I think we're at right now with Disney trying to push Falcon and Winter Soldier into drama series. We don't have hard and fast descriptions for what a drama series is. Obviously, you can't limit it to say something that has a second season, something that's going to have a second season, because in the history of the Emmys, there have been plenty of shows that have been canceled after one series, still nominated for the series award. Like, those aren't limitations you can make, but then we end up in this situation where it's the reverse Big Little Lies. Big Little Lies, in its first season, ran as a limited series, even though we all knew, and there was rumbles at the time that they were coming back for a second season. Still ran limited series, very successful there, immediately came back for a second season. They put things in place to try and avoid that. I still think people could technically pull that scheme if they wanted to. But now it feels like Disney is trying to reverse that in doing, oh, well, yeah, maybe. Maybe we'll have a second season. Maybe. But I'm not entirely convinced that there's anything different substantially between WandaVision and between the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Because in a larger sense, aren't all Marvel series part of an ongoing story? Like, isn't the likelihood that, well, we'll definitely see more of Wanda in films to come, but there's every chance she shows up in another Marvel series to come. And like, how do you quantify that? I think we're looking at, in the next 5 years, getting another revamping of the Academy rules that have to sort of stumble into the uncomfortable game of trying to quantify things that are at heart unquantifiable.
I'll play a little devil's advocate, even though you know that I've always been the defender of Marvel on this podcast, the defender of Disney in life. So it fits me very well to play this part. But these were questions that were addressed by Mr. Moore, in that his framing of the difference between WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier is that they cannot go back to the start of WandaVision. They cannot recreate the scenario in which WandaVision is told. They can continue that story with Wanda later on, but in his mind and in a reasonable framework, it would just be a different series. It would be a different show. And the one thing that I'd say that worked to Big Little Lies' advantage when it was doing this, when it submitted as a limited series originally, was that the ending of the series, even though it does end on a little tease that, hey, somebody's watching these women, and maybe they know what they've done, it still ended in a way where it was like, this could very well be the end of something. Like, this very well is the end of at least this arc. And then seeing how they awkwardly continued that in season two really kind of, to me, emphasized how well it worked better as a limited series, like how well it was positioned to be that as it originally existed, and then how poorly it was developed into what it became. And then again, like the points that he keeps making in terms of Falcon and the Winter Soldier during the interview, which I found really interesting, and it'll be even more interesting after Friday, is that he kept pointing to the fact that after you get to the finale, after you see this sixth episode, you're going to see the potential that we have to continue this story. And I was like, that is not a mentality that you take if you're going to end it. Like, that is not the way that people phrased it when they talked about WandaVision. That's not the way they phrase it when they talk about limited series. And if you are going to kind of tease the idea that something's going to be left open like that, then one, you're kind of admitting that this isn't the end of this story, and two, you seem to be implying that this specific story will continue, which is a key difference because, as we mentioned in the interview and as we always talk about, Marvel stories never end. Like, Marvel stories are just always going to be ongoing. You never know exactly where they're going to be picked up again or in what form, whether it's a movie or a show or just, you know, a cameo of some sorts or whatever it's going to be. They are always going to continue. So in some way, shape, or form, everything that Marvel has done is ongoing, and you could make the case that they all belong in series categories, whether it's drama or comedy or whatever, when you're talking about a TV show. So maybe it's WandaVision that's the one that would be committing category fraud if someone's committing category fraud. But it is really a strain on these definitions. And the most important facet to me is that the audience knows what they're getting. Because if you're watching The Falcon and the Winter Soldier and you think all of these storylines have to be wrapped up in six episodes, it's going to be a much less satisfying experience than if you're like, oh man, we're going to build this out for years. Like, I'm going to be able to kick back with Falcon and the Winter Soldier for the next five, six seasons, and really watch all of this get fleshed out. You could make the argument that Marvel is always saying, we're just starting strands and we'll pick them up because you have to watch all of our shit for the next 5, 6, 7 millennia if you're gonna, you know, really appreciate the endings of these stories. But yeah, it's just a weird transition into TV. And again, playing devil's advocate, Mr. Moore was very emphatic that they are just learning the process of making good television in Marvel right now. They really didn't know what they were doing in terms of kind of, I think he said, the canvas that they had to work with, or the expanse that television created until they started doing it. So, you know, we'll see.
Learning curve is steep.
Right. Learning curve
is steep.
And I think the results show that out, or bear that out. So
I will say, well, one, Libby, you make a great point. The best comedy, I think, of 2019 was probably Succession. And it obviously won all the categories for drama. That's just a good point that, like, the gray area between what's a drama and what's a comedy is non-existent at this point. But then there's also, at the risk of being too on the nose or too callous, and not that it's category fraud, but is doing something like this open up the potential for WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier, obviously not to compete against one another, but also the drama race is less stiff right now than the limited series race. And I mean, I'm sure Nate Moore and the people at Marvel have all the best intentions, but there's also probably someone behind the scenes going like, let's do this because it gives us a chance of getting more names in the bucket.
Yeah, I mean, if you think you can make it work, I would definitely suggest running your series as a drama series as opposed to a limited series at this juncture. In limited series, you have Queen's Gambit, which has won legitimately every award out there. And then all of these other very high prestige projects that have already released or are about to be released, or it's a mess. And drama series has The Crown. So, you know, there's some room there.
Winning would be tough. Winning would be tough, but getting nominated, maybe not so much.
Exactly. Well,
also, keep in mind that limited series have 5 slots. There's only 5 nominations for limited series. There's 8 for drama series now. So the less competition and the more slots makes it a very attractive place to be running a show.
I do think that what you see in moving The Falcon and the Winter Soldier to drama series is, I think they are having conversations likely to talk about continuing that story, but also I think they had a lot of I wouldn't be surprised if inside Disney they were a little surprised at how well The Mandalorian did at the Emmys last year. And if they have a sense that specifically drama series is soft, why not put another kind of name title into the fray to see if they can break through? Like, because as Ben said, there's 8 slots. Like, it can't hurt anything to move something over there. And as far as these things go, Falcon and Winter Soldier looks much more like a continuing drama series than WandaVision ever did. So yeah, that's a lot of time we spent talking about that. But I, for one, am happy about it.
I would watch a season 2 where it's Falcon teaching Eli Bradley how to become a superhero, just like his grandfather.
It's also, I mean, honestly, just really quick to end this, I'm sorry, but like, it's worth noting that more and more networks are they're hesitant to label their shows as the Emmys want them to be labeled, because they want it to be seen as a success no matter what. So that way, if it's, if it, you know, maybe if the ratings aren't as good or there's something that gets in the way of them making a season two, they can say, well, it was a limited series. We always meant it as a limited series, like blah, blah, blah. Like that was that's the upswing. And if there is success, then they can say, well, of course it's going to be a drama. Of course we were planning to continue it. Like there's no awkward transition here. Don't worry about it. And they want to avoid the kind of situations that HBO got in with Big Little Lies, where they had to, you know, really work to steer the conversation into a new realm and to frame the show in a different way. So, and at the same time, I think audiences want the exact opposite. Audiences need to know what they're investing in as they're making the decision to invest in it. So, it'll be an interesting way to see how that, you know, knocks things out. I always think the Emmys help with those conversations, for the most part, even if it is, you know, them getting it wrong. So yeah, we'll see how it continues develop.
Moving on to the big talk. Everyone remember to wash your hands for this conversation about the mayor of Easttown. It's Ben's new favorite show. I think it got his highest accolade, a B+. That's as high as it's as high as Ben can rank. That's why Ted Lasso and Mayor of Easttown both share it. So yeah, it's the new HBO. It could be in the limited series talk, that crowded limited series conversation we just had. Yeah. Starring Kate Winslet as Mayor Sheehan, a detective in small town Pennsylvania who's trying to solve a murder.
And a missing persons case. She's got a couple things going on.
And a missing persons. And her former teammate, who her brother is a drug addict, and they're trying to get that all figured. I mean, I've only seen one episode. You guys have seen more, obviously.
There's a peeping Tom in the backyard of that old lady. That's going to be a problem. Yeah,
that was spooky in the pilot.
Who knows what his deal is?
It's filled with a cast of people you know and love, and also Evan Peters.
This is Evan Peters doing Normcore.
But Gene
Which
Smart,
I love.
Gene Smart, Julianne Nicholson, David Denman, and Gurry Rice, and of course Guy Pearce, who is the killer, right? Has to be the killer, right? He has to be the killer, right?
Hard to tell right now. A lot going on.
Ben, were you on board when it was still announced that Gavin O'Connor was going to direct all the episodes?
I don't think it was ever announced that he was going to direct all, but I thought he was supposed to direct half, and that really did pique my interest. I was like, hold on a second here. We've got the Wayback writer. We've got Kate Winslet as in her first executive producer role, and we've got the man who directed Warrior. I mean, how could this go wrong? It literally could not. And Gavin, you know, sadly had to step down to just executive producer status, but Craig Zobel's there to pick up the slack, and my God, you know, we can't.
Homestar Runner's own Craig Zobel. Okay.
Well, that's a choice. It's also worth mentioning that Evan Peters' name in the show is Colin Zabel, which I was just like, hold on a second here, Colin Zabel, Craig Zobel. This can't be a coincidence.
I should note, I have not seen Evan Peters yet. Only in the little teaser at the end of episode one, he's not in the pilot.
Spoiler for episode two, his name is Colin Zabel. I'm sorry to tip off everybody on that, but something to look forward to. And to be more specific, I was absolutely in the bag for this show as soon as Kate Winslet came home, hobbled from a long day at work, sat down in her kitchen chair, started talking to her mom, Jean Smart, and her cousin, the priest of, just who's over there making cocktails, I think. She throws her legs up on the table, reaches behind her into the fridge, pulls out a rolling rock, squeezes some cheese whiz into the cap, and just called it a day. And I was like, this is all I need. Like, this could be the whole show. This could be it, and it would be perfect.
Removes the cheese whiz lid with her mouth, which I think is very underrated. I'll do Ben one better. I was all in on this show in, there's a chase scene relatively early, in this first episode. And, it's not a very long chase scene. It's a moderate chase scene, but Mayor is winded, for a full 45 seconds of like screen time afterwards, like as the screen is progressing. It's the most realistic thing I've ever seen. and was just like this attention to detail, and I think did so much at rounding out this character that was, you know, once this star athlete in this same town, and now she's, you know, huffing and puffing in a foot race. And I just felt very seen. And then I think we go almost, not directly, but very quickly into the scene that Ben just mentioned. And I was like, okay, I fully understand who this character is. Number two, I know a lot about this environment. It's just a kind of a masterclass in very quick world building that goes beyond just stereotype, I think. It would be easier. Very easy for this to fall into like, oh, like working blue collar, working class, suburb, you know, it's far more complicated than that. And while I'm not sure, I honestly wasn't sure I was enjoying the show as much as Ben. And then they sent out the first five episodes. I watched the fifth episode and I was, I don't know that I've been as gripped by anything that I've seen this year. So now I'm all on board, waiting for those last two episodes to be given access. But I mean, I think it's well worth people's time. It can get a little, it has the same feelings as a lot of shows that are like, and then there's a dead girl, yeah. You know, which is unfortunate, but there's more than enough to make up for that sort of grisly Criminal Minds CBS serialized drama thing.
The premise is definitely some well-worn territory, and it's just how you tell it and the acting in between that will make it worth it.
Yeah, right? I mean, I gotta say, like, this is exactly it. Like, the best parts of the series are also the worst parts of the series, in that you know, I hate that we're watching another show where the main thing is that a girl has been kidnapped and a girl has been killed. It's just like, this is, I mean, it is in somewhat a reflection of society, sadly, but it is also just such well-worn territory that, you know, to keep witnessing these horrific crimes and thinking about them makes it very difficult to talk about the show in the enjoyable terms that I often find it. Like, because it, like, as we were talking about before we started recording, this thing just pivots so hard from being the most fun I could possibly have on a Sunday night to just horrendous things that are unbearable to think about for a long period of time. And the way that they've balanced them so far has been impressive. Like, it's just worked. They've just been able to do it, even though it's nagging that the latter half exists.
Well, it's definitely of a piece of the stuff we've been talking about all episode here. You know, a lot of the funniest shows on TV right now are actually dramas, and it takes a very deft touch to be able to kind of make the most of both sides of that. And we're extremely fortunate that we're seeing so many creators who seem to thrive in that. But also, I think there's also the matter that it's very hard to get anyone, and by that I mean me, to watch things that don't have that element of humor, because it's so much. It's so much to ask people to sit down and watch what could uncharitably be described as misery porn.
Yeah.
It's just, things are so hard right now and have been so hard for so long. I need laughs at some level, especially if you're giving me a very difficult story to swallow on its own. I need you to help me with humor or with insight or I need something. Which I'm going to be very interested to see if any of that shakes out at the Emmys, honestly. I'm wondering if one of the reasons we might see Queen's Gambit do so well in limited series is because it's relatively light. It has all of the trappings of prestige television, but ultimately, when it comes down to it, it is about chess. And that's, you know, it's easier to consume. It may not be as nutritious, but it's much easier to sit down with on your couch and enjoy.
Well, that's why the last two episodes to me of Mare are going to be very important, because as you mentioned, there's definitely comedy in this, but there's also just so many things that you really want to see. Like, you really want to see Kate Winslet play a small town police detective. You really want to see her as like, you know, a former basketball star who's really struggling to just keep shit together and maybe goes a little bit too far to the dark side from time to time. Like, these are just things where you're like, yeah, I want to watch Kate Winslet play that role, even though we've seen that role a million times. We will right. never have seen it the way that Kate Winslet is going to do it. And that right. in and of itself is a reward. The accents, which I've seen every opinion on in the world out there, and have now reached a point where I am infuriated whenever someone claims that they're bad. Like, whenever someone is like, this accent is atrocious, this doesn't make any sense, what are they doing? It's like, how many of you are from Delaware County and can actually say, oh yeah, 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 they're not doing that right, or that's ridiculous, or nobody talks like that? These are a gift. Like, these accents are an absolute gift. Like, they give you something to talk about, they give you something to notice, they give the actors an additional challenge. They are something that adds like a huge level of entertainment, of pure entertainment, to a show that could have been swallowed by darkness. And the fact that they keep adding to those with just every other aesthetic choice in the series, from the costume to the environments to the framing of the shots, like
to the beer.
To the
I just
beer.
Wanted to have a so Yingling and a Rolling Rock all throughout the episode.
Get past me one of those R&Rs, kick back with Kate, you're going to have a great Sunday night. But like, literally every one of those adds up to such huge entertainment value that it's hard for me to, you know, purely talk about Mare as a good time show, because it's not a good time show. But my memories of the first five episodes are absolutely going to be rooted in the good stuff, like none of the bad stuff, all of the fun entertainment, all of the like really solid choices that they made to engross you in this world and make you want to be a part of it, even though it's often very dark and scary. So I think that when it comes to the Emmys, and when it comes to how well Mare may or may not do, whatever the takeaway is at the end of these seven episodes, whatever feeling you're left with could play a huge part, as it usually does. That's not a revelation.
Yeah, because like, I will say that like, watching some of them, I wasn't always like, yeah, this is a great time. Sometimes I was like, wow, every single person sucks. Like, every single person on this show fucking
even
Mare. Sucks.
I mean, you get that in episode one.
Well, no, exactly.
You don't have to wait long for Mare to be unlikable.
I mean, Jean Smart is never bad. She's always wonderful. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Mm-hmm. 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 Anyway, yeah. Always. So I don't want to. There are people who will not like this, and they're justified. There is plenty here that might, you know, put you off, and you might be able to not overcome it. And I get it. I get that there are some barriers to entry, but I think for most people, they will find something worthwhile in this series. And I also recommend it. B+ all around.
B+ is all around. Millions of Screens is a production of the Penske Media Corporation. IndieWire. Our theme music features excerpts of the classic YouTube video Bjork Talking About Our TV and Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory. Our editor-in-chief is Dana Hurst-Brights, and our publisher is James Israel, and our executive editor is Ann Donahue. Brought to you by the Western Pennsylvania English on display in Mare of Easttown. Millions of Screens endorses Miami English, which I spoke a fair bit of. It's sort of Spanglish. It's a lot of like sandwich as opposed to sandwich with a G instead of a D. Eastern New England English.
That's you, buddy.
That's Boston and Maine. And something I am new to, but do enjoy from time to time, Californian.
I don't enjoy
Millions
that.
Of Screens highly endorses spending some time with the inland northern dialect of English, of U.S. English, a.k.a. the Chicago accent.
Yeah.
That's what it's named on Wikipedia. Inland northern.
Northern. So catchy.
There are so
catchy.
Many dialects. There's what a country we have. Youper?
We should all take the dialect. We should all take the. Oh yeah, Youper. That's northern Michigan.
Yeah.
Up by Canada. Yeah, we should all take the dialect. I love the dialect quiz.
You can find us on Twitter at @MillionScreens, at Midwest Spitfire, Ben T. Travers, and at Leo New York City. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. So leave a review and let us know what you think. This is Ben, Libby, and Leo. Remind you as always that you shouldn't let poets lie to you.
You shouldn't let poets lie to you.
Ain't nothing wrong with a couple of cold brews and a cool podcast.